Welcome to More Than Words, a podcast about treating the whole child, brought to you by the Reading and Language Learning Center. I'm your host, Tristan, and today I'm joined by licensed clinical psychologist, Dr. Sabine Heisman, to discuss the effects of COVID on mental health. Hi, Dr. Heisman, how are you?
Good, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. We're doing well here. We're excited to have you here, talking all about mental health and COVID. So I just want to have you introduce yourself first. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So my name is Sabine Heisman. I am a licensed clinical psychologist. My background is I have worked in all sorts of settings, forensic, rehabilitation, hospitals, private practice, for the federal government, as an adjunct professor at George Mason in the forensic psych department. So I have a lot of experience with working with children, severely mentally ill, kind of the whole spectrum. But right now I really focus on children and children's mental health, and specifically psychoeducational testing. Yeah. So, you know, testing for things like learning disorders, ADHD, autism, emotional health, all of that. That's very critical right now.
Yeah. Wow. That's very cool. I didn't know about the, like the forensics and the government side of things. That's awesome to hear. I don't remember if you mentioned, but where you said you're at private practice now working with kids. So if people were looking to like come sure. find your services, where would they find you?
So Monday through Thursday, I'm at Mindwell Psychology, which we have our office in Chantilly. They do therapy and testing there. And then Fridays, I work for the federal government doing consulting through my company, CyBridge.
Okay, awesome. So I'll link to Mindwell, and if you want to send me a link to CyBridge as well, and I'll put those in the show notes and people can find you guys there. Well, let's just hop into our first question. So there was a New York Times article that came out like a little earlier this year, and it had some research in it showing there's definitely an increase in like, this sounds broad, but like mental health systems after COVID, you know, started. And it referenced that there was about 60%, people are 60% more likely to suffer from mental health problems after COVID than people that did not have COVID. Have you seen this in your experience, like in the clinic? Have you had more people come in post?
You know, it's been incredibly overwhelming. You know, there was already a mental health crisis in this country before the pandemic. And, you know, my focus is really kids. And what we know now and what we're still just getting research on is that the pandemic had a more severe impact on children and young people who are already struggling with pre-existing conditions from emotional problems to socioeconomic deprivation. And there has been such a massive increase in mental health issues for, you know, little kids, adolescents, teenagers, adults, so much so that the mental health field cannot keep up. So, you know, you'll find if you need help, you know, you call to get in with a therapist and it's a 6-month waiting list.
Oh my.
You know, and that is across the country. And so, you know, the system is overwhelmed and there has been a huge increase in the need for mental health treatment, but there's not enough resources. So the pandemic has definitely exacerbated, you know, the mental health issues, and it's concentrating them in some populations which are already underserved.
Right. Oh, that is honestly heartbreaking. So what symptoms are you seeing when people come in, and is it different between like elementary, middle, and high school students?
Yeah, you know, so what's interesting is there was this this study, and it was done in 2020, right? You know, that things are so fresh right now. We're still getting the research, you know, but what we do know, what the studies, you know, that have been conducted by like Children's Hospital is, you know, at least 72% of parents think the pandemic has taken a significant toll on their child's mental health, right? And if you break that up even further, you know, mental health emergencies rose 24 to 25% in kids 5 to 11, and then 31% in kids 12 to 17. And then that's not even the suicide increase, right? There was about a 45% increase in suicide attempts in emergency room visits with just girls 12 to 17 in 2021. You compare that, you know, to before the pandemic, and there's just these massive increases for kids of both genders, of all ages, and significant, you know, significant increases with more self-harm, you know, more anxiety, more depression. So absolutely, it had a massive impact.
Oof. Wow. That is, the numbers are staggering. I didn't realize that. So what should parents be aware of? Like what symptoms, like what behaviors, before obviously they get to an extreme level, what should they be noticing?
Right. And that's what we're trying to get out there to all the parents is, you know, these are the numbers and the, you know, the stats that we have from just 2020. They haven't even done the research for 2021. It's, you know, so we're expecting that the numbers are actually worse. So what we're trying to tell parents is, okay, as a country, you know, as a community, we've gone through, you know, a true pandemic that has a severe impact on mental health for everybody, right? Little mm-hmm. kids, big kids, adults, you know, parents. And so what do you look out for, right? Because you don't want it to get to a point where you're at the ER. So the big thing is, depending on the age of the child, how to talk to them, right? Because the little ones, the wee ones, sometimes they don't know how they're feeling, how to describe it, right? So, you know, they're feeling frustrated, they're feeling angry, but it could really be that they're scared, right? That they're not understanding what to do or how to describe how they're feeling, right? I mean, they're not going to say, I feel depressed if they're five, you know, they're going to be angry and acting out. Whereas, you know, a 12 to, you know, 15 year old might be, they're going introverted, right? They're mm-hmm. being more isolated. They're, you know, they're not coming out of the room as much. So to recognize the signs of stress in your child, you know, if they're under 10, I would say to do constant check-ins, right? Okay. You want to meet with them daily, right? And you don't want to interrogate them, but you want to say, you know, well, you know, mom had a rough day today. You know, I felt sad and I felt nervous when, you know, give examples so they understand mm-hmm. this is what that means, right? If I felt uncomfortable in my tummy and, you know, I got scared, you know, maybe that's anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. And so to give them the words and to normalize that, you know, everyone has bad days, even mom and dad and grandma and grandpa, it's okay to talk about it, right? Because what the most important thing is to almost keep kind of a daily log of how the little ones are feeling. So you notice, you know, wow, you know, little Timmy was really misbehaving today in school. What was that about? Right.
Right.
It could be that, you know, sure, maybe they didn't get enough sleep or, you know, but maybe they're nervous. Maybe they're scared. Right. Maybe, you know, I've had a lot of little kids say that they're not comfortable in big spaces where there's a lot of people, like crowds.
Yeah.
You know, and so things like that makes them really nervous. And, you know, knowing that and knowing the situations is really helpful. For the older kids, you know, I find that the teenagers and the preteens, they don't like talking about their feelings as much because it's not cool, you know,
right.
not considered cool. So the big thing is, you know, as much as you don't want to be the annoying mom and dad, that's, you know, how you doing? How you feeling? What's going on? You know?
Right.
I find the more subtle you are with the teenagers, the easier to get them to kind of coax it out.
Yeah.
So I always tell parents, don't do it at the dinner table when they're stressed after a long day, you know,
right.
Take the dog for a walk, go out for, you know, for some reason nowadays, all the teens love the Starbucks drinks with the, you know, take them out yes. for Starbucks. I'm not saying caffeinate them, but, you know, take them out for a treat, you know, an ice cream or something, and just talk about your day and what's stressing you out as a parent. And then, you know, just natural reciprocity, they'll start talking about their day and opening up, and you might be able to get information kind of indirectly. And it's so important to let them know that the line of communication is open. We are here for you as parents, mm-hmm. you know. If you're stressed out, if there's something you're scared of, it's normal, because so am I. You know, the pandemic has really stressed out a lot of parents and families. So they need to understand it's normal now, but we're in it as a team. You know, it's a community effort. And if they feel like they're supported and they're not alone, it'll make a big difference in the long run.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I think very important to hear, and good to know it's a daily check-in, especially with the little ones, because I think you almost like take for granted the fact that you like live with your little ones, right? So you think like, oh, I know when they feel this way or that way, but not all the time. So it's good to be reminded you need a daily check-in. It doesn't have to be scary. It can just be, how are you doing today? How was your day? Like, you know, just a regular conversation.
And one of the things that I think that people forget, that parents forget, is at least in this country, over, you know, 150,000 kids lost either a parent or grandparent directly to COVID. So whether it's them or indirectly a friend or a classmate, you know, there are kids that are really struggling with things that, you know, the traumatic deaths of people that they knew, whether it's teachers or friends or neighbors. It's not something that we as a society talk a lot with, you know, we're not really comfortable with death. And so I think a lot of the kids that we've seen are struggling with, you know, what is death? What does that mean? You know, am I going to die? Am I going to get sick? There's a big increase in anxiety over, you know, health concerns, you know,
right.
If I get COVID, am I going to die? Like, you know, grandma and grandpa or something. And so also talking to your kids about, you know, feeling comfortable with that discussion is so important for the well-being, so that they're not staying up late, you know, worrying about things, that they right. have somewhere to go, someone to talk to.
Yeah, that's a very good reminder as well. We've had a lot of parents share that their children are anxious about school, or like being in school now, but they weren't anxious about going to school before. So these are kids, you know, that had the time to go to school before COVID happened. So what would you say to a parent that's dealing with an anxious child now after COVID?
You know, and I feel like every single child I've seen fits some kind of criteria for anxiety symptoms where that wasn't the case before, because
right.
The kids tend to fall in two categories. The kids who are really nervous about COVID and their health, you know, mm-hmm. because it experienced the traumatic, you know, death of a family or illness. And they're like, they want to wear their mask, but the other kids aren't wearing a mask.
Right.
And so they're like, what if I get made fun of for wearing my mask? Or, you know, what do I do? What if I catch it? And then the other kids, you know, are more comfortable. They don't want to wear the mask. And so then the kids are feeling like there's this divide in the classroom, right. you know, and they're nervous about the social interaction and the social pressures. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't care what side you're on about the mask debate or anything like that. What matters is making the kids feel comfortable and safe, you know, whether they want to wear a mask or not wear a mask. It's about respecting each other. And that's what I said. Talk to your kids about, everyone's going to have a different view on the pandemic and on, mm-hmm. and on COVID and means. Just teach your kids to be kind and respectful to whatever's, you know, the choices their classmates make, right? The whole point about this is going back to school and having fun, you know?
Right.
But then you do have some kids where for the pandemic was actually a blessing in disguise for some of them, because some of them were feeling bullied and lost socially, you know?
Right.
And so they're even more nervous about having to go back to that. And so what I keep telling parents is, look, COVID was a game changer for everybody, right?
Right.
So you talk to your kids about going back to school and saying, we're going to take everything one day at a time so they mm-hmm. don't get so stressed. And we're going to check in, and we're going to talk to things, and we're going to talk to your teacher, and we're going to let them know how you're feeling so that you right. have an ally in the classroom, someone who can check in and you feel comfortable with. And I tell parents, talk to your school counselor, let them know that your kid might need a little extra check-in here and there.
Yeah.
You know, but I tell parents, it's critical for you to relate to the teacher, and you know, the teachers are stressed themselves. I mean, it's
right.
been, huge for everybody, but especially our, you know, poor teachers who yeah. have been struggling and, you know, have been the heroes in this whole thing. But check in with them and let them know, you know, your son or daughter is really nervous of coming back for whatever reason, whether it's
right.
social interactions or academic, they feel like they've, you know, they've fallen behind. Let them know what's going on so that they're aware at the very beginning. So you're not waiting till November or December, you know, when they already feel really lost and frustrated.
Yeah. yeah. Very good advice, and good to bring in the school counselor too. I think that sometimes that's a resource that parents forget is there. So that's a very good reminder to us all. So switching over to what you guys do, which is testing for these kids, do you see that this anxiety that's brought up about school and all of that has impacted the testing that you're doing for kids?
So yes and no. So we do a lot of psychoeducational testing, but then we also do emotional and psychological testing, right?
Okay.
So parents to us usually for one or the other, right? So either, you know, your child is struggling academically and you suspect that they may have ADHD or dyslexia, you know, mm-hmm. or dysgraphia, and you're trying to get a diagnosis, because most parents don't know this, but the schools really can't diagnose your child
right.
with these disorders. And parents get very confused. They come with us and they're like, well, the school tested us and we don't know what's going on. And I'm like, well, they can't give you a medical diagnosis. That's what
right.
this is for. And so the parents come and they say, okay, you know, in the pandemic, you know, especially with that year where, you know, a lot of it was virtual, you know, the parents are really seeing one-on-one what their kids can and can't do and what they're struggling with.
Yeah.
And so we were flooded with calls, because we had parents where it's like, you know, my kid cannot read where they're supposed to, and I didn't know, and I'm freaking out. It's
yeah.
like, okay, don't freak out. What we're going to do is we're going to test to see where they are, and we're going to see, do they meet clinical threshold for a learning disorder, right?
Okay.
And if they do, that's not the end of the world. It's actually good to catch it, because early intervention in general can remediate. If your child can't read and they have dyslexia or something like that, there are treatment options.
Right.
You know, there are things. My son, you know, couldn't read in kindergarten. He was really struggling. And we actually, you know, used the Reading and Language Learning Center.
Yeah.
He went from not reading at all in kindergarten, I mean, not even a word,
oh.
to testing at a fourth grade level. after 10 months.
Oh my gosh.
It was incredible, you know? So, I mean, I always tell parents, don't worry. Learning disorders are everywhere. We just don't see them. They're not diagnosed, but there are treatment options, you know? So we help parents kind of not only diagnose, but navigate what to do next, right? How to remediate.
Right.
And then on the other side, you know, you have the psychological and emotional testing where it's like, okay, my kid is really struggling with anxiety, or they developed OCD from their anxiety from the pandemic. Or like many of our high school students, you know, right now there was a survey and it said about 1/3 of high school students are unhappy and depressed. That's a lot,
that's a
huge number.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing also, unfortunately, is a massive increase in self-harm behavior. So it's like, we do not want it to get there, right?
No.
So we need to make sure that we know, okay, if you have depression, let's diagnose it and let's treat it.
Right.
Right. So the symptoms of anxiety and depression, they don't usually impact the academic testing.
Okay.
Only when you have anxiety that's so significant, you know, that then it kind of mimics that, you know, I'm so anxious that I can't focus or concentrate, right? And so parents are like, is it ADHD or is it anxiety? And it's like, well, that's what we do all the testing for, to really kind of tease it out, right? Because unfortunately, ADHD is also really misdiagnosed, right? I mean, people think it might be hyperactive, they have ADHD. And that is not the case, right? I mean, kids are active. You know, you have to have issues with working memory, with processing speed, with executive functioning. You know, there's a really, you know, visible pattern there of symptoms. And so it's like, okay, anxiety can absolutely impact your attention, right? And your memory, right? And so the whole point of the really, really comprehensive testing is to tease it out, because it could be anxiety, it could be ADHD, it could be both, but one could be exacerbating the other, right?
Right.
So you see, so I mean, so I think the testing is really critical. And I think parents sometimes, and I, you know, I feel so badly for them, they come in and it's like, well, you know, they're hyper and they can't pay attention, you know, but they're also, they forget about all the anxiety symptoms that could really be impacting a lot of us. So that's what the testing is for, to really kind of tease out, what are we looking at? You know, and then more importantly, how do we treat it?
Right. Wow. I think my next question for you was like, should parents discuss mental health with their teens? But we touched on that earlier with having the kind of like slow coax out of like, you know, how their day is going. But of course you said have an open conversation, but what would that conversation look like if you like wanted to have a deeper conversation about it instead of it just being like, how was your day? That kind of a thing.
So I always say, you know, look out for actual symptoms, right? I mean, you know your child best. If all of a sudden your happy little kid is isolating or not talking as much or not wanting to play, you know, and there's a change, especially for the little ones, the under 10, if you notice a change to their routine, you know, because little ones are creatures of habit, you know, they like to eat, they like to play games, they like to read, they have their whole patterns, you know. If you see changes to that pattern and it's like, wow, you know, little Susie is just not wanting to play anymore the way she used to, or she's not eating as much, or she doesn't want to go to bed, you know, she's scared to go to bed. If you're seeing differences like that, that's when you really kind of start to have a deeper conversation, and you try and say, you know, what's going on? I noticed that maybe you're not playing as much. Are you scared about something? Are you nervous? Are you worried? You know, and try and see kind of where the triggers are in what areas of their life. Is it social? Is it, you know, school's getting closer and they're getting nervous about they don't feel like they're on the same level with the other kids? For the older kids, it's actually easier, I think, because, you know, once you hit like 12 or 13, you know, teens are teens, you know, they're a special group. And I love my teenagers because, you know, they're not shy about being like, I just don't want to do this. Or, you know, I am sad, or I am mad, or I am angry. Like, they are more articulate in their feelings. They may not want to tell you about their feelings, but they can articulate what they're feeling better, you know? So you always know, okay, I feel like this person is maybe having some depressive symptoms, right? They don't want to get out of bed, right? They're sleeping all of a sudden. Now, teenagers sleep, but if your teenager doesn't want to get out of bed and do anything, even the fun things, right?
Right.
That, you know, that's something, you know? Or if you notice kind of more secretive behavior, or, you know, more anger, more aggressive behavior. You know, these are all changes in a child and of any age. And I think as parents, it's like you have to be really, really nowadays on top of that, because we are fighting kind of a war with social media and everything. And it's like, you know, it's so easy for the kids to get bad information, you know, from things like YouTube and social media sites. And I don't think parents these days are aware of just how many terrible things are on these platforms.
Right.
that give kids bad ideas about what to do, you know? Right. And I always say, really keep in mind what your kid is watching, you know, yeah. because there's a lot of videos out there that tell you how to do self-harm behavior. Right. You don't think about that, you know, your kid's right. watching YouTube and Minecraft and looks all happy. And then, you know, you just don't know. It's a bit of a rabbit hole. And so I always say, you know, really kind of be aware and be present. You know, mm-hmm. I know sometimes kids are frustrating, but if we can be present and set the tone and show them how important self-care is, you know, right. makes such a big difference. But those symptoms, it's like those little changes in your kid's behavior, keep up with those, because that's what's going to tell you, okay, you know what? I think this is more than just, you know, teenage angst, right? Right. I think my son or daughter might be depressed, or they might have anxiety. And then intervention, it's not just going to go away. Parents right. are like, oh, I kind of hoped it would go away. When it gets to a certain point, you know, it doesn't just go away. We're talking about a hormone imbalance. We're talking about something that needs therapy, maybe medication, you know, treatment. Right. But the earlier you can get it, the better.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned self-care, and I'm interested to know what you might include on like a list of self-care ideas, because everyone's taking care of yourself is different for every single person, because everyone's an individual. But have you ever suggested to a parent, like, you can do like self-care things with your kid, or like, these are the things I recommend, anything you have?
So I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of setting the tone in the family as far as self-care, because I think what happens is we have, especially in the Northern Virginia area, parents are busy, right? Yeah. And it's like life goes too fast, you know, yeah. so much faster than anywhere I've ever seen. And we forget, because we're always going, going, going. And, you know, we have to go to basketball practice and soccer practice and music practice and swimming, you know. And it's like, at some point, your body will stop, you know, yeah. working. It's going to be a problem. Parents are tired, and it leads to all sorts of problems. And so I always say, you know what? Do something amazingly fun with your kids, right? Yeah. Like, tell them in the morning, we're going to sit down and have a good breakfast together. You know, even if we're a little bit late, we're going to stop and take care of ourselves. We're going to go for a walk. We're going to go have a cup of tea, you know, by the creek or wherever you live. You know, we're just going to sit on a bench and watch the people and just do nothing, you know, and just yeah. stop and be still. What I found with a lot of our patients here is nobody knows how to just be still anymore. You know, yeah. we're always rushing. I'm guilty of it too, but it's, you know, and I have a little boy, and I'm always like, you know what, let's make a batch of brownies, right? And, you know, let's take it on a walk with our dog, and let's go just, you know, find some flowers and just hang out and, you know, just be still and just have some brownies and milk outside, you know, yeah. just something where it's fun for both of you to just be still. Mindfulness is really great. I do yoga with my son, and, you know, at first, like, this is weird, but, you know, you get into it, you know? It becomes something that's like nice, you know, it's challenging and it's fun. And even something that they really like, you know, whether it's, you know, learning a new skill, like a cooking class, or even just taking a walk with a dog yeah. and, you know, going on a, you know, what do you see? Let's find, you know, 10 things. Just slowing things down is so right. important to kids, because they're always on the go. We make them be on the go, right?
Right.
I mean, my son has more activities than I ever did. But, and, you know, and sometimes you got to be like, you know what, it's okay to take a day. We're going to take a mental health day. I would do that when he was in school. Sometimes I would take the yeah. day off, and I would say, you're not going to school today. We're going to go yeah. and have an amazing time. We're going to go have a picnic. And he would be like, great. And it would be the best days, you know, yeah. because it's just, we're just going to put the brake on and just do self-care.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you mentioned, that you did yoga with your son. There mm-hmm. is, if you've ever been on YouTube has, you know, a mix of good and bad, but there's YouTube channel that I really enjoy, Yoga with Adrienne. And she did a couple yoga classes for kids at the beginning of the pandemic that I think are really great.
Well, that, I actually use her stuff a lot, because I think she's fantastic. There's a lot of yoga places in this area, like Beloved Yoga, and they do classes for kids.
I didn't know that.
I mean, as young as like 5 years old. And they're great, because yeah. it teaches you kind of self-care techniques that you can do in your room, you know? Right. And so sometimes it's like, okay, it's, you know, Tuesday afternoon and we're all cranky. We're going to stop. We're going to do some breathing and some yoga, shake it out, you know,
right.
you know, change the environment. Right. And that's what your brain needs sometimes, is just a complete change, and be like, I am so stressed out. Okay. Then stop, right. put the brake on before it gets worse. do something fun, you know, go read a pretty book or do some painting or, you know, have a cup of tea, you know, and it makes such a big difference. It really does. It sounds simple and easy, but it is effective.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing those. I think that was my last question for you, but do you have anything else you want to throw in here?
You know, I would also say, there's, you know, I'm of a Colombian background, right? And so there's one thing I think that we don't talk enough about with mental health in children. And it's that, you know, the research is indicating that children of sort of racial and ethnic minority families have been hit especially hard by the COVID pandemic. And I don't know if a lot of people are really aware of that, but they're up to 4.5 times more at risk for losing a caregiver from COVID just because of the situation. And I always say, you know, I don't think stuff like that is being discussed enough, you know, and we've seen such a huge increase as well in certain communities. And I think if I could just leave the closing thought of COVID has been really hard and we're all struggling with mental health, but children especially. And the one thing I keep telling parents is, and every single parent that comes to me, talk to your child about being kind, because everyone is stressed and everyone is frustrated. But if we can just focus a little bit more on having conversations with our children about being kind, it will go such a long way with helping with some of the mental health issues, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone's coming out of this sort of dark period, you know, we're still scared, we're still worried, you know, we're tired. And so if we just start teaching our kids to be kind and show that kindness to their peers, it will make such a difference, you know? Oh,
yes. I love that piece of advice. It is so incredibly important. And I think we've all, I think if you've ever been having a very good day and you pass that kindness along to someone else, not even realizing it, you'll see a change in another person, even if it's a stranger. So I love that piece of advice. It is.
A little bit of love goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so, so much for being here. Yeah, this has been a joy. And I think it's going to be very, very helpful to all of our parents and other people who are just listening and maybe needed a reminder of self, you know, take time for yourself. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much to the audience for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a little rating and review, and we'll see you next time. Have a great rest of your day.